I think it's fair to say that we're a nation of animal lovers. Most of us enjoy animals, have animals, or if we don't have animals, we appreciate animals as pets. So when we hear of any animal abuse, there's usually public outrage, and justifiably so too. In 2016, a Tasmanian man was sentenced to 49 hours of community service in order to pay court costs of $82.15. What was his crime? He beat six penguins to death with sticks. Now, that caused a huge public outcry, led to more than 50,000 people signing a petition calling for a review into the sentence. Community outrage across Australia over the decade has led to a number of state and territory governments changing their animal welfare laws. South Australia amended the Animal Welfare Act. The maximum time for imprisonment in SA jumped from 1 to 2 years. The maximum fine increased from $10,000 to $20,000. But is it enough to stop animal abuse? Joining me now, Alex Whittaker, Senior Lecturer in Animal Welfare and Law. Alex, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Graham.
Some of these sentences and punishments for animal cruelty just seem ridiculously inadequate.
Yeah, and that's what we were interested in the study, because really nobody's actually looked at it and got together the data on it. But we had this idea in our head that, yeah, they were, and you certainly hear about it in the media. And so essentially our research showed that the fines and the imprisonment sentences that are coming out are quite low, and probably the public would be pretty shocked by that, I would think. Average prison sentences at the moment about 77 days from our research.
And for what sort of crime would that be?
So those are often the aggravated offences. So those are the more serious offences, which are, you know, often the ones that hit the media. They're really quite horrific crimes against animals. The more duty of care type offences, so neglect of animals or failure to, perhaps take animals to a vet and get treatment, those are usually the less serious offences, and they're often given fines, to be honest.
The stories that, you know, just stick in your mind, and while you were talking, I thought of, I think it was in the Adelaide Hills a couple of years back, they had photos of horses that had just been left underfed, and they were literally just skin and bone. It was horrifying.
Yeah. And, of course, we see all this in the press all the time. And of course, the other difficulty is actually in detecting these offences. So, you know, the RSPCA have limited resources. It requires members of the public to report on things they see and to go down that path. So, there's a whole bunch of issues in actually detecting these crimes and then enforcing them as well.
Do police have powers to prosecute animal cruelty cases?
The police absolutely do, and they often do take animal cruelty offences to court. It's usually if they're the police have been called out for some other reason, and it's part of other charges that may be being investigated. Often they will pass them on to the RSPCA because they accept that the RSPCA generally have the expertise in dealing with them. But, yeah, the police certainly do prosecute these offences as well.
But mainly it's in the hands of the RSPCA?
It's mainly in the hands of the RSPCA, yeah.
Do they have the adequate resources to be able to do it?
Probably not. I mean, really, they would suggest not, I'm sure. They obviously get some limited government funding for their enforcement work. But, you know, they have 8 RSPCA inspectors for the whole of South Australia. They have one lawyer who is responsible for taking these cases to court. So they are severely under-resourced.
Who are the main offenders when it comes to animal cruelty?
So, it's across the board. It's perhaps not what you'd expect. It's often older, sort of middle-aged women and men of about the same, so about equal proportions for both males and females. That's for the lesser offence, so the sort of neglectful type offences. We are seeing it from our data, and really what we anticipated, actually, that the aggravated or those sorts of horrific offences that we were talking about are more likely to be committed by slightly younger males, so our average age was about 33, but it was mainly males committing those offences compared to females. Having said that, thankfully there are not that many of those offences, so that is based on a small data set.
What intrigues me is the number of times that you hear someone has taken in for animal cruelty, and they've got, you know, 35 cats, and they're all underfed, malnourished, and unwell, and they claim to be animal lovers. You know, that just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I think there are probably mental health issues associated with a lot of these cases, and I think a lot of the people that are particularly in the hoarding cases, they do believe they care about animals, and they perhaps are trying their best, but you know, there's mental health issues. There's perhaps a lack of understanding and knowledge about pet care, so they actually think, well, that's okay. And, of course, if they're living like that, then, you know, it doesn't seem wrong that their cats are living like that as well. And I think the RSPCA are actually seeing more and more of these types of cases. And it's a really tricky one to deal with, because how do you punish people like that? I mean, it's probably not appropriate to send them to jail.
Yeah, of course.
You need some kind of rehabilitation and help for them. To get through that. And, you know, the RSPCA will tell you that in those cases, they really appreciate the orders given by the courts to stop those owners actually getting further animals, because that's the main thing, is to stop them getting more animals and to sort of prevent the cycle from continuing.
Sure. What rights do RSPCA have to go on to private property to investigate cases?
So the RSPCA have powers under the Act to go and investigate. They usually will seek a warrant to do that, so they apply to the court for a warrant. And they also have the ability to do inspections, which are usually by arrangement with farms and animal enterprises. But they certainly have powers if there's an emergency, if a member of the public, you know, thinks there's an animal in imminent danger, they absolutely have powers to enter premises, but would usually get a court warrant for that.
So what would you advise people to do if they think there's a case of animal cruelty that they're aware of? Who should they?
Yeah,
they should notify the RSPCA?
Notify the RSPCA, absolutely. You get as much information as you can, you know, if it's an ongoing thing that, you know, perhaps neighbour's dog been left alone and you're not sure it's being fed, document days when it's going on, and get as much information to the RSPCA as you can.
What did you find out about where the offences were committed? Are some areas more prone than others?
Yeah, so the vast, well, the greater number of the sort of clump of offences, about 35% of the offences were occurring in Adelaide's northern suburbs, followed by the northwestern suburbs and the southern suburbs. And you know, you look at the Australian, the South Australian census data, and that does suggest that northern suburbs are the lowest sort of socioeconomic status. We didn't tease that apart, but, you know, we sort of believe that probably is related to the socioeconomics of that area. And so really, if we can target education programs in that area, I think it'd be really valuable. Because, again, a lot of these are the neglect-type offences. You know, perhaps people doing it tough, you know, don't have the money perhaps to feed their animals or take them to the vets, and that's why these offences are arising.
In light of all that, has the increase in average penalties gone up over a period of time?
Yeah, so interestingly, that was our original research question, and it has. So before the amendments in 2008, prison sentences have gone up from about 37 days to 70-odd days, and fines have doubled from about 700 to 1,500. But interestingly, the Parliament, of course, did increase the maximum. So if you take that as a percentage of the maximum that the court could give, it's actually about the same. So we're giving a sentence is about 10% of the maximum. In real terms, it's increased. But in legislative terms, in terms of maximum benchmarks, then it's not really.
Has it made any change in the number of animal cruelty incidents?
Yeah, it's something we are actually interested in. There's not a lot of data out there on that, and it's something we would like to chase up in further studies. The RSPCA statistics suggest not. They are still having, you know, they're actually having increases in the number of crimes being reported and investigated. Obviously, there are resourcing issues in that, and they actually have had a little bit more resources to do these investigations over the last few years, so it could be related to that. But it's suggested that probably not.
Your research has been obviously very extensive and far-reaching. What would you like to see come of it now?
Look, we really want to get some more data. The RSPCA are interested looking at whether there's a way that penalties can be increased, or other ways, or education programs, other ways of targeting and reducing these crimes. We're actually interested also in the whys of what's going on. We've really just had a look at the statistics, but to really delve into, why are there more offences occurring in the northern suburbs, and can we improve those numbers by things like education programs, particularly targeting kids. I think that's probably something we really should be looking at, teaching kids about pet care.
It starts. Get them while they're young.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alex, thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much, Graham.
Alex Whittaker, Senior Lecturer in Animal Welfare and the Law. Animal cruelty, it happens far too often. Does the punishment fit the crime?